As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Analysis and opinion so honest, it's just a matter of time before they get themselves in trouble. Baseball Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, welcome to Baseball Central for Thursday, August 27th. It is a game day, Baseball Central. We will have Blue Jays and Texas Rangers baseball at 2 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and across the Sportsnet family of television channels, Sportsnet East, Ontario, West, and Pacific. The Jays starting today, two games up on the Texas on the New York Yankees after last night's hammer job on the Texas Rangers. Going to get some news to you right away. News, I guess we can call it that. It's Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. It's hello. Baseball Central. Hello, hello.
What up?
Blue Jays lineup for today's game. True Tulowitzki. Troy Tulowitzki will lead off and is a designated hitter. Josh Donaldson is at third base. Jose Bautista is in right field. Edwin Encarnacion is at first base. Deonner Navarro gets the start behind the plate. Kevin Pillar is in center. Ben Revere is in left. Chad Pennington at second. Ryan Goins at shortstop. What did I say? Chad Pennington?
Yes.
I did, because his parents were going to call him Chad Pennington, but he has a cousin named Chad Pennington. So that's Cliff Pennington's at short at second base for the Blue Jays. Ryan Goins is a shortstop. You don't believe me, do you?
No.
Marco Estrada is on the mound for the Toronto Blue Jays. For the Texas Rangers, Delino DeShields is leading off in center field. Shin-Soo Chu is batting second in right field. Prince Fielder third at DH. Adrian Beltre in the cleanup spot. He is at third base. Mitch Moreland at first. Elvis Andrus is at shortstop. Will Venable in left. Bobby Wilson behind the plate. Hanser Alberto is at second base. And Yovani Gallardo is on the mound. And by the way, the tip of the day from Jeff Blair. Troy Tulowitzki is going to go 3 for 5 today.
Whoa.
Maybe a double. Maybe a home run thrown in. Why do I say that? Troy Tulowitzki lifetime against Yovani Gallardo. He's 11 for 24. That works out to .458. Four doubles, a home run, four ribbies, a walk, and two Ks amongst all major league players with a minimum of 20 at-bats against Yovani Gallardo. Troy Tulowitzki has the most hits. You can also keep an eye on Edwin. He's got three bombs off Yovani Gallardo. Josh Donaldson is 3 for 7. Small sample size, but there you go. Mr. Barker, what'd you make of last night's? I mean, I called it a hammer job. That's what it was. Grand slam by Edwin. Pilar homers. Justin Smoke absolutely assaults home run. I mean, what can you say? It was more of the same. And David Price on the mound.
I think you hit it right there. That's the one difference I saw. Regardless of all the things that happen on the offensive side of the ball, they do that all the time. Their approaches are off the chart. It's contagious. They're taking approaches from the dugout to the plate, which is impossible to do. 1 through 9 is doing it. David Price adds something that's, I don't think, comes around a whole lot. And they look like a different team. I understand they're a really good team, even without David Price. But when David Price goes to the mound, it just seems different. It looks different. They act different. It's sort of like we know we got this day. Tomorrow we're going to battle. It's that kind of thing. And that's what a true number one should bring. We see that a lot with him, the way he approaches the game, way he approach batters. The way his attitude is when guys are on base is totally different when he's, you know, there's nobody on. It's a lot of fun to watch. It's a little unbelievable to see how good this team really is, and I think they can get better. You know, the couple of starters look a little tired to me. If those guys get it going again, this team's going to be real scary for a lot of people.
And let's consider this about David Price and the Texas Rangers, shall we? The Texas Rangers have some players who had some pretty good numbers against David Price. They had, they being the Rangers, had beaten David Price 7 times in both the regular season and postseason. That was tied with Boston and the Yankees for his most defeats against an opponent. Of course, pitching in the American League East for a long time, he would have seen the Yankees and Rays much more than the Texas Rangers. His 5.19 career ERA against Texas, again, this is going into last night's game, was his highest against any American League club. And after holding Price winless in his first nine career starts against Texas, he is 2-1 in his last four meetings. Now he's 3-1 in his last five. And both of those wins came in Arlington. Until last night, the most recent win was in the AL wildcard tiebreaker at Globe Life Park on September 30th, 2013. So just, this is a team that hit David Price, has hit David Price pretty well. And as you pointed out, it's a team that generally hits lefties pretty well.
Well, it does. Again, I think we always talk about the offense feeding off a really good pitcher. Well, it works both ways. Mm-hmm. You could see David Price last night feeding off the really good offense of the Toronto Blue Jays. And it's, you know, it gets back to everything's working all at one time. Defense is working. They're going first to third on a lot of balls. Ben Revere goes first to third on a blooper by Pilar. You're not supposed to do that. Everything's working north and not south. And when the entire team's doing that, it's right now they look unbeatable. Now, obviously, they're not going to win every game from here out, but
really,
they look unbeatable. And
Do you want to go on the record and say that this team will not win every game?
I went on the record saying they were going to go 6-2 or 7-1, and I'm going to hit either one of them. It's going to be probably 7-1.
You got a good chance today of being right in that regard.
Probably, yeah. How's that feel? That I'm right and you're not? Well, you said 5-3, so that's in the rearview mirror.
Nothing unusual. It's not unusual.
Anyway,
I don't keep track of these things, do you?
You don't? Well, the only reason I do is because it's fun on occasion to be right and not wrong.
I've never known that feeling. I just want to get through the day trying to be right 20% of the time.
20%?
I believe in lowering the bar. Don't set it too high. All the people, don't aim too high, because you're always, if you aim too high, you're always going to end up missing. Aim low, and that way it's easier.
I'm a glass half full guy, so I shoot for the stars.
I'm a glasses crack guy.
Yeah.
I'm a glasses crack guy. Want to talk about Edwin Encarnacion's grand slam last night. We'll run it up here for those of you watching on Sportsnet for a couple of reasons. I'm sitting at home watching the game, and it's funny. Kevin, you talked about this when I came in. I can't remember the last time I've seen a guy hit a grand slam and not be certain that it was going out of the park. Edwin's got no clue when he swings this, does he?
None whatsoever. It gets back to that thing when you do hit a ball really, really hard, it feels like you don't hit it at all. Maybe that's one of those deals, but you know, I think that just goes to show how hot he is. And you know, a lot of guys are that keep your head down kind of thing through your entire swing. It's just one of those things. I've never seen that. I've never done that. I don't even know. You know, it'd be interesting to ask him, and I will the next time I see him, what he was thinking and what was going on there. But it's, you know, again, it's a guy that has a good approach, takes it to the plate no matter what the situation is, and tries to do the best he can by putting a good swing on a ball. Other than that, I've never seen that. I don't even know how to explain that. But, you know,
Edwin's been known every now and then to kind of, I wouldn't say style, but he's been known every now and then to take a peek at his home runs. But that's not styling. That's a guy, oh my God, I just hit a grand slam.
Well, yeah, the only reason he's running hard is because he saw the two outfielders running together. And he figures, man, I may want to run here.
Interesting aspect of that home run, StatsCast, which is kind of a cool way to watch baseball, and MLB.com uses it. They had that ball leaving his bat at 110 miles per hour. Now, I know that you know, there are a lot of people out there who are going to roll their eyes and go, "Here we go, another statistic." The reason I mentioned that is I had a conversation with Alex Anthopoulos 2 years ago, and I was asking him about the decision to give Edwin a long-term contract.
Sure.
And this, you know, however many years ago they did it. Mm-hmm. And I asked about what went into that decision. Obviously, his numbers were good, but what was it that the Jays saw in Edwin that made them think that this guy, who was basically a player without a home for a while, the Cincinnati Reds had him at third base, they didn't know what to make of him. What made the Jays comfortable in making that commitment to a guy who had a reputation at one point as having a bit of a soft body?
Sure.
Right or wrong, he had that reputation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And Alex Anthopoulos said to me that one of the measures they used with Edwin was speed of ball off bat.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "We keep track of that statistic. It's very important to us in how we analyze our hitters. And we felt comfortable, based on the numbers we had seen off Edwin's bat, to make this commitment. Now, mm-hmm. Obviously, that's not the only reason. That's not the only reason. But I found it interesting that a general manager would volunteer that information. So 110 miles per hour. Mm-hmm. What does that tell you? What does speed of ball off bat tell you as a hitter? If the speed of the ball off my bat is registering a very high miles per hour.
Consistently is the deal.
Consistent.
Yeah.
But what does that tell you as a hitter?
Well, that tells you, first of all, you're on time. First of all, you're going point A to point B in a hurry. That's the whole deal.
So quick. You're quick.
100%. Yeah, you want to try and get the knob of the bat as quick as possible to the pitcher and not any wasted movement. I mean, I don't go away from my mm-hmm. body. Obviously, the further away you go from your body, the weaker you are, the slower you are. That means everything that obviously Edwin's doing is keeping inside the ball, direct to the point. Fastest way between two points is A to B. It's, you know, it's an easy theory here. But
that, you know, it's interesting the way you put it about the farther away the bat is from the body, the less force you're generating. It makes sense.
The weaker you are. Yeah, 100%.
But I think a lot of people will watch the game and yeah, it makes sense and you understand that, but it's interesting to have someone actually explain that's why you want to be so quick to the ball.
If you slow down a swing and you're looking at it from the front and not the side, the last thing you should see is the bat head. The first thing you should see is the knob of the bat. That's the last thing you should see is the big part of the bat, meaning the barrel. Mm-hmm. That's when you hit the ball. That means you're quick inside the ball and you're not out and around it. Out and around it means you're casting. The first move I do is I go away from my body. That means it gets slower. And the slower you get, that means that A to B is not going to work, meaning you can't hit a fastball. That's the whole deal I think Alex is mm-hmm. trying to make here yeah. is him hitting fastballs consistently, because that's how you do really well in the big leagues is you hit a fastball all the time and on occasion you hit a hanging breaking ball. You're not going to make a living off of hitting breaking balls. It's just the way it is. So you make the living off of hitting the fastball. How do you do that? Be quick from point A to point B. And Alex, I think that's what he's saying about Edwin is he's very good at it. Everything has to be in sync to do it, meaning everything you do starts from the ground up. Mm-hmm. If my feet are doing it right, my hands are going to do it right, and it falls in place. So Edwin has always had quick hands. That helps, but you have to have good feet. Everything you do starts with your feet, and consistently to hit a fastball. When I played, I had trouble doing that. I was in between a lot, which means I would start my swing when my front foot wasn't on the ground. Mm-hmm. That's never good. That means you're trying to catch up. Your barrel dips below the ball, and obviously you're not going to square up the baseball consistently. Now, on occasion, you'll do it because of physics, but consistently all the time, which is what a big leaguer does more than everybody else, they do it more times than not. That's the difference between Edwin and say, me. So I think that's what he's trying to say.
It's Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. Joe Siddle will join us from the broadcast booth at Globe Life Park in about, about 18 minutes or so.
Man, that's good math.
30 minus 12.
17 minutes and 10 seconds.
Yeah, it's Manitoba math for you.
All right.
One of the things we saw last night, Kevin Pillar talked about this in his post-game interview with Barry Davis. The bottom of the order, very quietly, the bottom of the order in this series, and maybe even to a certain degree, a little bit started to do this in Philadelphia, but Ben Revere, Pillar, we've been kind of waiting for Pillar to start hitting the odd home run again,
mm-hmm.
and you saw that last night. But the bottom of the order, it seems as if 7, 8, and 9 have kind of realized that really all we have to do here is just get on base and turn the lineup turn the lineup over. The reason I mentioned 7, 8, and 9 is because very quietly Ryan Goins has gone from being essentially an offensive black hole to a guy who's at least a contributor. Now he's not the equivalent. I don't think he'll ever be the equivalent of Devin Travis as an offensive player,
mm-hmm.
but at least he's contributing. Least he's drawing the odd walk. He's putting himself on base. What are you seeing from Ryan Goins at the plate that explains this? I'm going to say this effectiveness. He's become at least mm-hmm. an effective player. Not a dominant player, mm-hmm. but at least an effective player. What is he doing differently?
I'll say this. The first thing I think is the lineup. I think the lineup takes a lot of pressure off everybody. It makes it easy just to go up and try and be yourself. We see that with Ryan Goins. But I think the big adjustment was he was real tense with his hands. And, you know, any swing, I'm not a very good golfer, but that a couple of times I've tried to golf. When you're stronger with that golf club, you don't hit it as hard, and you're not as quick with the golf club. That's the issue when you're hitting. When you go up and try to, you're seeing sawdust, and you can actually see some guys' white knuckles. That's never a good thing. That's been Ryan Goins' problem. So when Brooke Jacoby said, hey, just sort of lighten it up and flip-flop it on your shoulder just to get a little bit of rhythm and make it easier where you can feel your, you know, your hands are real soft and easy so you can be quick to point A to point B. That's the ultimate goal, is to do that. And he's doing a real good job of that because he's a pull hitter. That's another thing. To be a pull hitter, you have to be really good with your hands and easy, meaning you could walk up. Whenever you're going really well, you could walk up to a guy that's not paying any attention and should be able to knock the guy's bat out of his hand.
I was going
to
ask you that.
That's how easy he's holding the bat. It's right. Just barely in his hands, so it can be quick. It's fluid, nice and easy, short and quick to the baseball, so I can buggy whip it. And you see a lot of that. And again, I think it has a lot to do with the lineup he's scattered in. There's no pressure on anybody in this lineup. That helps. And again, he made an adjustment. And that's what it's all about, is making adjustments to make you a better player and help your team, and he's done that. Take your hats off to him.
Jays were 12-4 winners over Texas last night. They will wrap up their three-game series this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Marco Estrada on the mound for the Blue Jays and Giovanni Gallardo on the mound for the Texas Rangers. You know, a guy we really haven't spoken a great deal about, or we haven't talked about, and there's two of them actually, Eric Goins and Brooke Jacoby, the hitting, I guess Brooke Jacoby, the Blue Jays hitting coach, Eric Goins, the assistant hitting coach. But I'd forgotten this. Brooke Jacoby was the hitting coach when you were with the Reds organization.
He was, yeah, in the big leagues.
Tell me a little bit about Brooke Jacoby and his philosophy as a hitting coach, because we really haven't talked about it. And I'm not one of those people that thinks the hitting coach is like the offensive coordinator in football. Yeah, I don't think there's a comparison. But clearly Brooke Jacoby is, at least he's not affecting things negatively.
He's not.
What's he like as a hitting coach?
Well, he's a very nice person. He's very easy to work with, and he's a very quiet hitting coach. He's not going to go to you. You're going to have to come to him. That's the way it should be in the big leagues. When you're in the big leagues, you should know your swing already. It's just little tweaks when you can't figure something out and you need a different set of eyes. Then you go to that guy. But he has one approach that I've always known. His approach is get your foot down and get it singing.
Meaning, get your foot down and get it singing.
Get it singing. That means I get my foot down on time early where I can recognize the pitch, and then I let my hands do the work. And that's what it means by getting it singing. And it's a real simple approach, and you're seeing that effect. Now, whether it is with the Blue Jays or not, because the Blue Jays, you have to say, they have some really big-time names in this lineup. It's not like he's doing a lot of, you know, tweaking and saying this and that. It's more of, you know, keep doing what you're doing kind of thing. And this guy's going to throw a 2-1 breaking ball to you because he does it 97% of the time. It's more of that fact. So I think it's more of get it down and get it singing and simplify it. That's what it's all about. Make it as simple as possible and go up and try to do that at the plate. They're doing that a lot.
I'm going to just throw a question out at you here about Marco Estrada, who will get the start for the Jays. And I'm not going to start looking ahead to playoffs or anything like that because we've got a little bit of baseball left to play. Where do you think he fits in, three-game series, just out of interest's sake?
I talked to people.
I'm sorry, five-game series. Where do you think he fits in a five-game series, Marco Estrada?
Well, I'm sure it depends on who you're facing, sure. how many lefties and righties are in that lineup, and you know how much success that team's had against a certain guy. You would think it would be, obviously, Price. We'll throw that out. He's the number one guy. And then it's sort of, to me, it's either going to be Estrada or Dickey, depending on the team. I talked to Pete Walker, and the first thing I said was, what do you think of Estrada? He said, where would this team be without him? And you have to say it makes a lot of sense. He's earned the right to be in the conversation.
Oh, absolutely. He's been, I think you can make the case from start of the season to now. You can make the case he's been their most consistent starting pitcher.
He is. Well, yeah, right. He has. Yeah, he's going to give you innings. I think it gets back to this team is making adjustments when they have to, because all that matters is wins. And he's made that adjustment with his breaking ball. You know, he's a changeup fastball guy. He's added the cutter. He's added more breaking balls to get guys out and ultimately get that team in the dugout. That's what it's all about. You have to give a lot of credit to Pete Walker. We don't do that enough. You know, everybody, when a team's struggling and certain areas struggle, you want to get rid of guys. Well, You have to give Pete
Walker. Some of us wondered if he wasn't going to be fired in season.
100%. That's what I'm saying. So you have to give guys credit that's made adjustments in season. I know, Jeff, it's very hard to do that in the season. It's easier to do it in the off season when nobody's watching,
sure,
and it doesn't matter. But when it matters and you need to go out and add a cutter, add a breaking ball, it's hard. It's hard on your ego because that means something else is not working and you need to make a change. Yeah, all these things add up to a really good pitching coach that says, this is going to work. Trust me, it's going to work. And they bought in. It's, you know, it's a nice little piece for everybody to hang their hat on saying it's worked. If it doesn't work, then we're not going to do it. If it's going to work, we're going to do whatever it takes.
Yeah, I have a lot of time for a guy like Estrada, and we've seen this a little bit as well, I think, with Drew Hutchison, or we saw it in the last couple of starts. Pete Walker said it's one thing to make an adjustment in the bullpen,
mm-hmm,
and be comfortable with it. It's another thing to take it into the game. And one of the things you'll hear from the Blue Jays about Marco Estrada is essentially I've had people tell me he's one of the quickest learners they've seen because he will work in something in the bullpen, and he's got absolutely no fear of taking it into the game. Absolutely
You don't get paid on what you do in the bullpen. You
right.
get paid on what you do on the field. And, you know, when you're adding a pitch, that's a little tough sometimes because you don't know how to throw it and you don't know when to throw it. And you have to rely on a bunch of things around you, meaning a good catcher and a good pitching coach and a lot of good defense. It's a, you know, those are things that are very hard to persuade guys to do in season, and it's working.
Let you know, by the way, that the matchups are more or less set for the weekend series. The Tigers coming in town for a three-game series starting tomorrow. It'll be Matt Boyd, the former Blue Jays prospect, on the mound against R.A. Dickey on Friday. Buck Farmer. Be careful how you say that name, broadcasters. Buck Farmer. Detroit Tigers right-hander. He will be on the mound Saturday against Drew Hutchison. Drew Hutchison likely will be called up after the game Friday, perhaps during Friday. And then Alfredo Simon versus Mark Burley in the Sunday afternoon tilt at the Rogers Center. So there you go. I'm glad that Buck Farmer is pitching on a Saturday, so I don't have to.
Doesn't Simon have six fingers? Is he the guy that has six fingers?
Antonio Alfonseca had six fingers.
He doesn't. Simon doesn't have six fingers? No.
No. Antonio Alfonseca had six fingers and six toes, and he was with the Montreal Expos on one of Felipe Alou's best lines ever, as he said, when Antonio Alfonseca throws a split-fingered fastball, he really throws a split-fingered fastball. I mean, I thought it was funny. Anyhow, do we have the StatsCast thing available? Just out of interest sake. No harm if we don't. We do? Okay, now, the reason I wanted to show this is when the Jays got Ben Revere at the trade deadline, one of the things Alex Anthopoulos and to a certain degree John Gibbons talked about was Ben Revere's defense and how Ben Revere took good routes to the ball. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, by extension, what they were saying essentially was that Ezekiel Carrera didn't necessarily do it. We're going to show this to folks on TV.
Mm-hmm.
This is his catch last night at the wall. And StatsCast will break it down and show you the velocity of speed or the velocity he's running, the consistency of his route, the distance covered. I'm sorry, the route efficiency. It was 95.5% route efficiency. And I thought of that when I saw that catch last night because it's a circus catch, but it just kind of gets to the point. And there you see David Price applauding. It gets to the point that Alex and John Gibbons had talked about with Ben Revere and how he took smart, effective routes to the ball. And that's not, and no disrespect to any, to Chris Colabello or Ezekiel Carrera or anybody else who'd played left field. But that scared them. The lack of efficient running of routes scared them. And one of the reasons they wanted to get Ben Revere in here is because, their analytics, their diagnostics, whatever you want to call it, had showed that he, at least in left field, generally took pretty good routes.
Shows you how much Alex, he's done his homework, knowing that guys take really good routes. Because obviously when you take a good route, you get there faster and you make more plays. And, you know, it's that maybe that's why they said he's our everyday left fielder, regardless of who's pitching. That's, again, they're more worried about defense. They think their team's going to be a lot better if you have really good defensive players and you take what you get on the offensive side of the ball. It's You know, it's everybody's, again, everybody has to do their job. And right now, Alex has done his, Gibby's done his. It's, you have to have a good leader on occasion, Jeff, you know? You do?
I know that.
There you go.
That's why you're the leader.
Nope, that's you.
I'm Byron Leftwich. Just give me the game plan and I try to execute it to the best of my limited abilities. Joe Siddle. We can call Joe Siddle a leader. He certainly knows a bit about doing his job. He is in the broadcast booth at Globe Life Park in Arlington, and Joe Siddle will join us live from the ballpark. We're a little more than 90 minutes away from first pitch. Jay's going for the sweep this afternoon of the Texas Rangers Baseball Central, and this is the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Baseball Central for Thursday, August 27th. Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker for your listening and viewing pleasure. Less than 90 minutes now. Nah, still around 90 minutes before the Jays and Rangers wrap up their three-game series in Texas. The Jays going for the sweep. Joe Siddle going to join us from the booth very quickly. Just a couple of things I got to mention out of last night's games. Justin Verlander carried a no-hitter into the ninth inning. It would have allowed him to join Nolan Ryan, Sandy Koufax, Bob Feller, Cy Young, and, of course, Larry Corcoran as the only pitchers with three no-hitters. His last no-hitter, of course, was May 7th, 2011 against the Blue Jays. I remember that game very well. So Justin Verlander loses his no-hit bid, the first batter in the ninth inning. The Washington Nationals have adjusted their rotation so that Max Scherzer faces the New York Mets a maximum number of times. Max Scherzer did not make a start last night. Boom. San Diego Padres beat the Nationals 6-5. The Nationals are 6.5 games back out of the Mets in the NL East. They got no shot at the wild card. Unbelievably, the Washington Nationals may miss the playoffs this year, which is just, that's something I don't think anybody saw coming or something that anybody suspected. And kudos to the Houston Astros. They beat the New York Yankees yesterday to allow the Jays to pull two games ahead of the Yankees. It was the Astros' 71st win this year. Last season, they had a grand total of 70. So kudos to the Houston Astros. Let's bring in Joe Siddle from Globe Life Park in lovely, hot, stinking hot Arlington, Texas. How you doing, Joe?
Hi, guys. How we doing?
We're doing well. We're doing well. So Kevin wants to talk to you a little bit about David Price's the fourth inning last night.
Yeah.
Before we get to that, just want to talk a bit about the lineup tonight. Today we've got Troy Tulowitzki leading off at DH today. Obviously, his numbers against Giovanni Gallardo are the best in among any baseball player with a minimum of 20 at-bats against Gallardo. And Deonor Navarro gets the start with Marco Estrada. And, it's funny because Greg Zahn's talked about this. But, Joe, we're at a situation now with this team where Josh Tolley is going to catch R.A. Dickey. Deonor Navarro is going to catch Marco Estrada. That appears to work. I'm not going to blame Russ Martin for anything that's happened to Mark Burley lately, but the fact of the matter is Mark Burley and Deonor Navarro have a pretty good working relationship. How is this all going to balance out from your point of view?
Well, I think Russ Martin's still going to be in there as much as possible. I don't think you're going to see Deonor start catching Estrada and Burley and Tolley catching Dickey and Russell catching 2 days out of five. That's just not going to happen. And I think if you want to look at the performances of Mark Burley, yes, pitchers do work with certain catchers better sometimes, but I think Mark Burley is at the point in his career where he's going to have some lulls in his season, much like hitters have their ups and downs. Pitchers do too, and I think Mark hits spots throughout the course of the season. We saw it last year around the All-Star break and shortly after. Had a great first half. Hit that lull for a little while and then picked up and finished stronger. Could have done that just recently. Might be in the middle of that right now. He's not getting any younger. I think he'd be the first one to admit that. And I spoke to Pete Walker about that. There's just days he's not going to feel 100%, but at the same time, Mark Burley's very capable of coming out next time and pitching a great ball game. That's just the way it's going to be right now. And I really don't put a whole lot on that on who's behind the plate.
Joe, you're the perfect guy to ask about David Price. Jeff mentioned the fourth inning last night. He gave up a hit, a walk, and then it just seemed like something happened. I guess you can use that word freak a little bit. Not enough with a guy like this. I think he threw 13 fastballs and 2 changeups to strike out the next 3 guys. Have you ever seen any guy like that? And if you were catching, how impressed would you be with a guy that can – basically, he went from 93 to 97 to 98 because he can. You ever seen anything like that?
Well, I'll tell you who comes to mind right away. It's Justin Verlander back in his heyday when I was hanging around the Detroit Tigers, because he's the kind of guy that almost paced himself, and then you see him getting up to 97 and 100 in the 6th and 7th and 8th innings. It seemed like he got stronger as he went, but I think David Price is in that same category. These are some of the best pitchers in the game. What do the elite pitchers in this game do? They step up when they have to. David Price had the bottom of that Rangers order, and you could clearly see that the game plan behind the plate, too, is to try to overpower these 3 hitters, Strasburger, then Jimenez, and then Alberto, and he certainly did that. But how ironic at the very last pitch of the inning, guys, that he went to the changeup, a 3-2 changeup to Alberto. I mean, that's just unfair after going 97 with the fastballs, and then he finishes with his outstanding changeup. It's so good. It's such a weapon for him. It actually took me off guard. I thought he was going to just continue. I may have even said it on the broadcast. I thought he was just going to come back with the heat and blow him away like he did the other 2 hitters. But he went to the changeup, and again, just an unfair disadvantage to a hitter against a guy like Price. But that's what great pitchers do. They step up and they dig deep when they have to. He did it with a couple runners on base and nobody out.
Joe Siddall joining us in Baseball Central. We talked a little bit earlier about Ryan Goins and, you know, the fact that 7, 8, and 9, the 7th, 8th, and 9th spot in this order, more often than not, are contributing to some of these big innings. Maybe not, you know, they're not putting the exclamation mark on the big innings, but they're certainly contributing to them. Ryan Goins so far in August has 16 walks. That's more than he had from April to July. I think he had 14 or 13. His OBP is just is 446. Is this a guy who has finally figured out what he needs to do offensively to contribute?
Well, I think when you look at Ryan, and he's not 22 years old anymore, but he's also not an older player, and maybe he is figuring things out a little bit later than some. Now, let's not say, you know, 26, 27 years old isn't old by any means,
sure,
but it perhaps has taken him a little longer than some. Clearly, and Jared and I talked about it during the broadcast last night, he really looks like a different hitter, and what stands out for me is his plate discipline. Last year, it looked to me still like a player that, you know, he's a part-time player here. He's trying to make his mark, and that's a tough role, guys. Mark, you know that. As a part-time player, when you do get a chance to play, you want to impress. You want to do something to get back in the lineup the next day or another day that week, and sometimes as hitters, when we do that, we expand the zone, and we saw Ryan do that a lot last year, so I think that's part of it, and I think the other part is simply developing as a hitter. And we talk about that plate discipline. He walked in the 6th inning last night, took a 3-2 fastball just in off the plate. Great eye, great knowledge of the strike zone. So I think part of it is that he is now playing a little bit more and maybe feeling more comfortable, that he does not have to do so much. In doing that, you slow the game down a little bit, you see the ball look better, and I think his plate discipline has improved. Those 2 things can turn you into a better hitter right away, because now when you are swinging that bat, you're attacking balls in the strike zone more often. We saw that with his RBI single in the 2nd inning.
Joe, you talked to Justin Smoke before the game. It's every time you watch him play, you just talked about it. A guy doesn't play every day, has to have a great approach. Simplify it. What did you learn from Justin Smoke by talking to him?
Well, you know what? He's a big guy, and he's a switch hitter. He's a natural right-handed batter. And when we talked about that in our pregame interview, it's very interesting for Justin. He's a natural right-handed hitter, but where's he getting all his at-bats this year with the Blue Jays? Mostly left-handed. So a lot of times hitters will mostly work on their natural side, which is right-handed, but he knows that he has to really work on his left side because he's basically not hitting much right-handed. He's been doing that, but it's so tough as a switch hitter. Again, he's been kind of that platoon-type situation, and I asked Justin about that. Not easy when you're platooning, but he understands it. These guys understand that John Gibbons is armed with a lot of weapons, and that's a wonderful problem to have, but he just continues to try to stay sharp. Being a big guy, he has a tendency to get a little bit long with that swing, and I think that's why you see the strikeouts and the lower batting average. But I'll tell you what, if Smoke can continue doing what he does around that first base bag with his feet and with his glove, and then he can contribute like he did last night by popping a 2-run homer out of the ballpark to break a tie, that's okay if he wants to hit 220, as long as he has those weapons, and that's what he brings. It's been really a nice run for Justin.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I remember watching him take batting practice in spring training, and Brooke Jacoby and John Gibbons were behind the cage, and they both said the same thing. Left-handed, you know, Brooke and John both said it's pretty simple. His swing gets really long. Like, there wasn't any sort of big mechanical mystery to it. It was comparing the two sides. His swing was a lot longer from the left side. But you're right, you know, it's got to be, I mean, I'd never really thought about that, but every switch hitter has a natural side. And man, when you're not playing every day, Joe, and it's great you can take batting practice and extra BP and everything, but when you're not playing every day as a switch hitter, you really have to take a completely different approach to maintaining your swing, don't you?
Well, you do. You have to get your work in the cage and in batting practice. But like Justin said, he really has not been working on his right-handed swing a whole lot because he's really not getting many at-bats. He's working mostly left-handed. But then you look at his number, he says, I'm doing way better right-handed. So it's a battle. And don't think that doesn't play on you mentally either. But getting back to him being a big guy and tendency to get long, and that's what guys do. And, Bark, you're a power guy. Most power guys do have a tendency when things aren't going good that they get a little bit long. And what I mean by that is those hands get away from you a little bit and you're not keeping them inside. That fastball in, when you start being very conscious of that fastball in, and pitchers will do that to smoke, then you start trying to be quick with the fastball inside. When you start doing that, then it gets you soft away. So it's a constant battle. If you can stay short, and when you get in that rhythm as a hitter, especially a Justin Smoke, a bigger guy like that, staying short, now he can handle all pitches. And we saw him handle that slider last night from Colby Lewis very well, hitting it into the second deck.
Joe, I need to ask you, the Anaheim series now in Texas, we see consistently 1 through 9, the opposing pitching staffs are just pounding the Blue Jays in. Now, you know, in the past, when you watch pitchers, they're not very good at throwing in. And you see an entire pitching staff try to throw an entire team in, just doesn't make any sense to me. If you were Texas, not trying to give any trade secrets away, is this the best way to attack the Blue Jays?
I think you have to. There's no question, especially the top part of that lineup. These are all big boppers that can leave the ballpark any pitch. I believe, and we saw it in Anaheim, those pitchers tried to establish the fastball in. They just didn't do a very good job of it. And it's one thing to come in and buzz a guy and then go right back away, 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 away. But I think you have to pitch in more consistently, but you have to do it effectively. And Garrett Richards tried it on Sunday. These guys just missed their spots. So they tried to come in a couple of times, and we saw it on the highlights several times, trying to come in. The catcher is in there, but that pitch leaps back over towards the middle of the plate. These guys crush you, and it starts right at the top. Now, Tulo's heating up, but Donaldson, Bautista, and Encarnacion, you just cannot make mistakes to these guys. But because they're so good, there's just very little room for error. A lot of teams, those pitchers on the weekend and these Rangers pitchers, maybe get away with a lot more. It just doesn't happen against this lineup with the way they're swinging the bats right now.
Joe, we're going to let you go rest the pipes. Look forward to your work this afternoon alongside Jerry. The Jays going for the sweep against the Texas Rangers. First pitch at 2 o'clock, and we'll see you down at the ballpark on the weekend.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, gentlemen. Have a great day.
It's Joe Siddle.
You can hear
the Jays radio analyst.
Hear the fan in the background? That's funny.
Is that the fan or is that,
like
is that
a,
the cleaners?
Sounded like a fan to me.
Are those horrible seat things they run around?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Sounded like a fan. That was,
well, I hope they have
really
the fan because it's going to be. What's the it's supposed to be 100 today, isn't it? Isn't the game time temperature supposed to be 100?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Texas. I really do.
You like the 100.
I love warm weather.
You'd like the playing in the 100 degrees? It's very hard.
I don't know if I'd
you
like
know what
to
the
play
hardest
it,
part is sweating when you're wearing batting gloves. It's very, very hard to
how
do
so?
That.
Just,
well, just because the bat moves, and that's not a good thing in your hands. When you go to swing, your batting gloves move. That's the reason why you wear batting gloves.
Right.
So the bat doesn't move in your hand, and when it's wet and the sweat's going down in the glove and it's wet and it moves, that's never a good thing. So you may see some bats flying in the stands today. That's all I'm saying.
I always remember some of the old timers will tell you that, and I say old timers respectfully, you talk to guys like Cito Gaston or Felipe Alou used to talk about when they played in real hot weather, especially places like Busch Stadium in St. Louis, they'd put cabbage leaves in the soles of their shoes, or they would put cabbage leaves on the top of their heads underneath the cap to keep themselves cool. And they used to talk about all the things you had to do when it was at those really hot afternoon games. And you're right. I mean, you're not going to perspire through those gloves.
Yeah, it's very hard. I've always heard of guys using a wet towel and wearing it in the field, just putting their hat over it because it keeps your head, you know, nice and cool, and that's the biggest deal. But I was getting coffee this morning, and You know, which I always do for you. I always buy you
not
coffee.
Always. You
which,
didn't,
you know,
I do didn't yesterday.
I do it a
you
lot.
Didn't yesterday,
well, you know,
and you didn't do it Tuesday, and you didn't do it last week.
Because I wasn't here most of last week, so I have an excuse. But, you know, most of the time when I'm down there, I think
just a minute, you were pissed off at me last week. Well, or yesterday you were.
Well,
no, wait. I was mad at you. No,
oh, you were mad. Well, anyway, you're mad a lot, so I'm not sure. But, you know, I was at some newsstand, and I looked over on some newsstand, and I was like, no, that's not right. So I looked over. And never will guess what I saw on the newsstand. It's a book written by Jeff Blair. And I was like,
I'm not paying him to do this.
Are you kidding me?
Show the camera. I'm not paying him to do it.
Are you kidding me? This is what I saw.
Was it at a better bookstore?
No, it was the newsstand down by the coffee shop. I'm not
there you go.
We can't mention the coffee shop, but I was there and I was like, holy cow. So I had to go spend $142.50 because that's what this book costs for some reason.
No,
I've never read it.
Not.
And you know, it is.
I could give
it's
you.
It's very well written is what I understand. I have not read it. But the one thing I wanted, I am sitting by a Hall of Famer.
Okay.
I am sitting by a guy.
The Manitoba Sports
written,
Hall of Fame.
That has written a
Manitoba
book.
Sports
and I am
going
to ask you to autograph this.
Oh, you don't want me to do that?
Well, yeah, I have to.
Okay.
I have to have you autograph it because that's the reason why I spent $142.50
I will do it
for
when
the
we're
book.
Off the air. I'll sign it the way I signed Travis's
book. I'm going to give you your time right now to say where people can buy this. And how they can get it? Well, I mean, can you go on?
It's on Amazon, but it's available at Better.
And what's it?
It's available all over the place. They've reprinted something like 15,000 copies of the book because of the Blue Jays' success. So it's available at all the usual outlets and some of the unusual ones, I guess, too.
So I am sitting beside a true legend. That is what this is all about. Is a legend and a. In book writing, obviously, and Hall of Famer. And
Manitoba Sports Hall of Fame.
It's unbelievable.
But again,
off the charts.
But Darren,
you're in the Hall of Fame in something.
Darren Millard's also in the Manitoba Sports
well,
Hall of Fame.
Well, hey, what's that got to do with anything?
Just throwing that out there.
So you have
just
to sign this
there.
Now.
It's Darren Millard. We're not talking Cooperstown.
And
but it's a nice Hall of Fame.
It is. Well, you have to say something nice to it. It's a very nice looking book.
Yeah, the cover is very good.
Yeah, I'm not real sure about the price. You know, $142.50 is a little steep, but I figured you're worth it.
It wasn't $142.50.
I figure you're worth the, you know, I did have to, that's,
okay.
I had to put that on my credit card, so it is,
it's
a special time, so you need to sign that.
All right,
is what I'm trying to tell you.
I'll sign it.
Be nice, because I've heard other things you've written in other people's books, and you need to be nice.
Okay, I will. It's my sense of humor.
So there you go, for the first time I was, you know.
You
give you a little
broke
pump.
Down and bought that.
Yeah. It was not $142.50, but
no, it wasn't.
You know?
Thank you for doing that. Thank you for buying it.
So and, I, you know, there there's
if you want any books signed at any time, bring them down to the ballpark.
You only have one book, right?
Well, yeah.
So you're only going to get one, you're only going to sign one book for me. I'm not going to buy another one.
Okay.
I don't have to do that, do I?
No, you don't.
All right.
You could if you wanted.
Well, I'm not real sure
it's
I can afford
it. It's a great gift. It's a great gift.
I'm not sure I can afford it.
It's a great gift for the kid going back to school.
It is. Well, my son's not three yet, so he's, you know, I have an excuse.
We need to move on.
I thought I'd give you, you know, it's.
Thank you.
It's a big deal that somebody writes a book. So I'd give you your deal there.
It is a big deal, and I will sign it nicely.
I really don't expect you to, because I wouldn't have it any other way that you just be you.
Okay, I'll sign it. Appropriately.
All right.
So there you go. Andrew Walker is up next. I think Greg Brady's still on holiday. So Andrew Walker will get you set for the Blue Jays game. I'm sure that means at some point Mike Wilner's got to join him, right? Oh, Barker's joining him too. There you go.
I am. For the first little while.
For the first little while.
Sure, yeah. That's all they can only take.
So it'll be like an extendo version of the Blue Jays pregame show with Andrew Walker, Kevin Barker, Mike Wilner, and a host of thousands getting you set for the game today as the Jays go for the sweep against the Texas Rangers. Yovani Gallardo on the mound, as we said, for the Rangers. Marco Estrada for the Jays. Again, keep in mind, Troy Tulowitzki, 3-for-5 today.
Wow.
I'm calling it.
Out on
maybe
a limb,
even,
you're going.
Maybe even a home run in this game. He
nice.
Owns Yovani Gallardo.
Nice.
Troy Tulowitzki, mark it down, 3-for-5 with a jack. For Joe Siddle and Kevin Barker, I'm Jeff Blair saying thanks for joining us on Baseball Central. Stick around. Andrew Walker will get you set for the game. 2 o'clock first pitch on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Sportsnet East, Ontario, West, and Pacific. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a great day and enjoy the baseball, everybody.